The city of Jacksonville looks to block block parties. Possible trouble for State Senator Aaron Bean. And is the Duval superintendent on his way up to Detroit? Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime, or stream the show on our Facebook page. It's live there, too. Just ahead, we take your calls on the week's top stories. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, women's leadership takes the stage at this month's Gen W conference, plus the cast of Fences at Players by the Sea. All of that ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday and time for our weekly media roundtable as we welcome our regular panelist, blogger Fred Matthews. Good to see you, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Tim Gibbons is here, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be with you.
And our own WJCT reporter, Ryan Bank.
Good morning.
Guys, great to have you in the studio. Lots to discuss this Friday, from possible trouble around the career of State Senator Aaron Bean, the city banning or putting a moratorium on block parties, and more. But our top story this week, it looks as though school superintendent Nikolai Vitti is pulling up stakes. Vitti, a finalist to become superintendent of the Detroit Public Schools. In the 5 years he's worked here in Duval County, Vitti has made a lot of improvements to student performance. He's also at times clashed with teachers and school board members with his no-nonsense style. We want your calls and your thoughts about the news that we're losing another superintendent, most likely. 549-2937, that's 549-2937. Or go online and email the show at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org or send us a tweet. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. This isn't a surprise. Vitti's from Michigan, or grew up there, and he hadn't exactly been silent about his frustrations in the job over the last few years.
No, it's no secret at all. And the fact that many people didn't realize, of course, his hometown is in Detroit, because all the focus was on his actions down in Miami. It is kind of ironic is that the person who chairs the board now is one of two or three that were not in favor of him getting the superintendent's job in the first place. So they immediately, this meeting was called to discuss the possibility of maybe having to replace quickly with no real agenda. And, you know, there's no, we don't know that he's going to get the job, but everybody's assuming that with the candidates in the race and his bona fides, that he will get the job.
And, you know, as Fred points out, Tim, that school board, that Duval County School Board, was pretty evenly split between pro and anti-Vitti camps.
Yeah, they were and they are, and there has been a fractious at times relationship with the school board. So, you know, something like this comes up, it's, I think all of us have had situations where you're in a job that maybe you're having issues and another opportunity pops up that, you know.
Right.
It's good timing.
Well, and let's talk about his record. In the 5 or so years he's been here, student performance test scores have gone up.
Graduation rates
have gone up. He can point to that record if he goes on to a bigger market. And now the Duval school board members are going to have to try to find someone to build on that legacy. Vitti, according to the Florida Times Union, is encouraging them to promote someone from within rather than go outside.
It's interesting with that record. There's a sense, I think, among people who really follow education that the general population doesn't realize how much he's accomplished during his time here. There's still a ways to go, but if you compare Jacksonville to other large urban school districts, not to St. John's County, which is a different sort of situation, but you compare it to other large urban school districts, and we've definitely had improvements, and people don't really seem to know about that.
Right, and it's not easy for any large urban school district to move the needle on numbers, and you see this in large cities all over the country. Superintendents come in, they have a very difficult job, and they don't typically stay in the job very long.
And this was a tough time for when he came into this district to turn all of these indices around, the African-American graduation rate, trying to stem the tide against the private school, the charter school issue, which is growing, and the school board basically doesn't have any choice but to accept the charters. They can take them away if they fall below the state requirements, but they have to accept the charters. That, of course, is one of the things that's affecting the declining enrollment in the public school system. So he's had a lot to battle here. But the ending numbers here, at least these four-year numbers, are pretty good with graduation rates and at least holding the title. And if the recent audit is to be true, it looks like the atmosphere within the school system for teachers and support has improved since he started.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're discussing the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Get on the line now and share your thoughts at 549-2937. And we'll know whether Nikolai Vitti is heading to Detroit in a couple of weeks. Meanwhile, controversy for Aaron Bean. Published reports say the state senator from our area helped a friend's business obtain $1 million that was hidden in the state budget. This after the two discussed how Bean could help promote the business. This is all according to budget documents and emails. And this $1 million tucked away item was apparently to benefit a mental health screening program run by Catherine Drew. She's the wife of the Nassau County tax collector, John Drew. As we look at this story, first reported by the Naples Daily News, Aaron Bean, Ryan Bank, what's Aaron Bean's response to this?
Well, Aaron Bean isn't saying a whole lot. He's saying, you know, the Florida Ethics Commission is investigating. He has hired Bascom Communications to basically issue all of the statements that he'll have on this issue. And he's pretty well insulated, and he doesn't seem like he's too interested in making any direct comments on this. I think the interesting thing about this is that this $1 million wasn't really even included in this ethics complaint. This was something that reporter Eric Sarkisian at the Naples Daily News stumbled on because his paper had obtained about a year ago a list of secret projects, quote unquote secret projects, projects that were shielded from the governor's veto pen, largely so. That were being passed through university budgets. And one of them was this $1 million project. So the original ethics complaint, which I think was sent to a lot of journalists around town here especially, a lot of people sat on it because there wasn't a whole lot there. Mm-hmm. But it was after he connected the dots between this ethics complaint and the list that the Naples Daily News already had that he found this $1 million appropriation.
Which sort of begs the question, are there other items tucked away in a pass-through budget?
Oh, plenty of
universities that could draw the eye of regulators or ethics supervisors.
And you're indicating that the senator is using a public relations firm to speak on his behalf?
Yes. Oh, in terms of this specific issue, he'll talk to you just about anything else. But he'll when it comes to questions about this $1 million appropriation or the ethics complaint which was filed by a man of the name of Carlos Slay, who actually ran and lost pretty badly against John Drew, the Nassau County tax collector. There's politics.
How unusual must that be? I mean, anybody who knows Aaron Bean knows that he's very open, very cordial, gregarious even to some extent. And for him to, this is almost like lawyering up.
What's the potential outcome of an ethics investigation? What's the end game?
I think it's worthy to mention that this, even Eric Sarkisian, who published this report, says, you know, there is no smoking gun. It is not illegal to come up with an appropriation for a friend by a suggestion. I mean, lawmakers do it all the time.
That's called Tallahassee. I mean,
right. I mean, it's not illegal. The issue here is that what Sarkisian found by doing an email request from FSU and from the Florida Senate was a couple of statements that were made by John Drew that could seem to suggest that Bean could have profited off of this $1 million appropriation. I think the phrase was, I'm so happy that all of us are going to be making money together for a good cause, or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So that's what the issue here is. The issue is not the appropriation. Scott has said that Governor Scott has said that he wishes that he had more oversight when it comes to vetoing these projects, and he thinks it's a little sneaky, which it kind of is, to put an appropriation in a university budget like this for a friend, and he wishes that he could have seen that as a line item. However, whether or not this comes to charges for Bean is really a long way away.
Well, it will certainly be a campaign issue, won't it?
All right, let's go to your calls on the top stories of the week. Lots of calls about Superintendent Vitti leaving, potentially leaving for a job in Detroit. 549-2937. Tammy is on the west side. Hi, Tammy. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to address your comments about Nikolai Vitti being all the success he's had here in Duval County. I'm an elementary school teacher here in the district, and what I can tell you is that I would be cautious about some of the data that comes out. Some things just don't seem to add up. For example, the curriculum that he has the elementary school is using for language arts. There was a recent study done by a company that the district hired to evaluate how effective that curriculum was or is. You know, being in the school district, we can tell you that since it's a free curriculum that comes off the internet, it's not the most effective and was made in New York and doesn't necessarily address Florida standards. He also has implemented some different ways of using some of the blended learning curriculum that we use in order that it looks as though students are prepared and are being moved up to the next grade level when in fact they're not. And when they get to third grade and they're not passing the Florida State Assessment Test because they are 1 and 2 years behind because of the policies that Dr. Vitti has put into place, it comes down to, as was stated in the article, that teachers just don't know how to use the curriculum properly. And that's really not the case. However, I know from comments that Melissa has made on this program before, teachers are just seen as being people who complain. It's not that we're necessarily trying to complain. We're trying to point out that this may not be the best route that we have or options that we have to use. And when people just keep trying to say, well, he's improved the graduation rate, I question that as well based on some information that's come out of Orange County of how students are pushed into charter schools, and it doesn't look like they've dropped out. And I wonder about that based on some of the charter schools that I saw at the School Choice Expo this past January. So
okay.
I just would be cautious.
Okay, and Tammy, and to be clear, I don't think teachers sit around and complain. I think that the teachers in this district have worked very hard. I also see a difference in how Dr. Vitti is perceived by some of the business leadership in this community and political leadership, and how the educators in the school district regard him.
I agree.
Okay. And so.
And I will say it in terms of this. Dr. Vitti is a very good politician, and he's very good at telling the constituents that he's speaking to at the moment what they want to hear. My daughter, when she was a senior in high school, had the opportunity to hear Dr. Vitti speak at one of the events for an organization that she belonged to, and even she picked up on it as a high school senior. Not with me saying something, just with her coming back and saying, you know, he's saying this, and when people are asking questions, he kind of avoids it. He just sort of skirts the issue. And that's just one example. I mean, I could tell you, you know, just from hearing how he speaks with people during the district PTA and how he talks to them about the things that they want to hear, but you know, example, and it's been a couple of years, but it's been like, you know, the outside recess and how much time the students spend outside or, you know, get that time. He would tell them one thing, but something else was going on in the schools.
Okay.
And, you know.
It's spring break, so it's nice to have a teacher actually call the show, which is very unusual. But Tammy, listen, I really appreciate you calling. Thank you for giving us your perspective on this. Thanks, because we normally don't get that because teachers are usually teaching.
Hard at work.
Well, that's going to be an indication of what he'll have learned here in Duval County, because after all, this was his first superintendent job, which was one of the knocks, of course, they had about him getting it in the first place. He was going to get his first major superintendent's job in a major school district, but he learns that here. If he gets a job in Detroit, where things are much, much worse than they are here.
Well, yeah, if he thinks he had some heavy, tough sledding here, I know, right?
I think that's why they're looking for at him, though. Really,
is because he's been through the fire, here.
Right? You know, our own Sid Hoskinson did an interview with an education reporter from the NPR station in Detroit, and she was saying, you know, looking at the skills that VD has and being a part of these educational discussions here, the debate here in Detroit, they kind of match up.
All right, Eric, let's go to Eric on the South Side. Go ahead, Eric.
Happy Friday, all.
Happy Friday.
Dr. Beattie is responsible for decimating the school libraries in Jacksonville during his tenure. When I graduated from Englewood in 1966, I was a product of disaccredited schools, and one of the major findings was the complete inadequacy of the libraries. Well, most schools now have no more libraries and no more books and no more media specialists. A media specialist who was Teacher of the Year some years ago gave up in exasperation and moved to St. Johns County. I know of what I speak. How are you supposed to view multiple media sources that simultaneously when you can only look at one page and one book at one time on a computer? What Dr. Beattie has done to this community is a complete disservice, and he needs to take Tommy Hazzuri and those board members who voted to go along with this with him. Thank you.
Well.
Wow. Wow. A lot of unfiltered commentary coming in on this issue. Tim.
I am curious, anytime there's somebody in a job search like this, he's one of three finalists. We're talking as though we assume he's going to get it. It seems like
he may or may not.
He may not. I'm always curious when, you know, after a conversation like this, after there's everybody talking about good and bad things he's done, if he doesn't get the job, that just has to make for an awkward, you know, Monday morning walking back in. Well, still here, you know.
These are public positions. Yep, so yep. If you go for another one, people will know about it. Okay, let's go to Brian in Ponte Vedra Beach. Go ahead, Brian.
Yes, good morning. I'm a parent. I have a son. We relocated from Southern California to Florida just in the last couple of years. He's a senior in high school. And he finds the curriculum really, really dumb compared to what was offered in California, and I think Dr. Vitti is part of that. I think that you were right in your earlier segment about promoting from within the school district, and I think that Mr. Joyner would be fabulous as a replacement for Dr. Vitti. And as far as I'm concerned, Dr. Vitti, good riddance. Go to Detroit. Have a good time. Enjoy the ghetto. But I don't think that we'll miss him at all.
Wow. Okay.
Well, the last...
Jeez Louise.
The last appointment we had from within, he didn't... He got us through the desegregation phase. That was Dr. Zinke. But he didn't fare too well with, again, the same thing with board members when he got out. There was a lot of, well, we're glad you're gone with him, even from within.
You know what? Anyone who's lived here for some time has seen superintendents come and go. And can you name one that's been beloved? It's a thankless job, and they're usually hated because people are so enraged and frustrated about our school system. And no matter who you put in there, they're going to take a lot of shrapnel. They're going to take a lot of incoming because people have a real axe to grind about the problems in the school system. And we're seeing that right now. And of course, a lot of these callers are taking issue with specific directives and changes that he's made, of course. But... it is a thankless job.
It is, and you can argue, honestly, you can argue about a whole bunch of things. You know, you can look at the totality of somebody's time and say, well, yeah, on balance it's good or bad, but these things were definitely a bad thing. But the problem is nobody's going to come in and make Jacksonville schools good across the board in every way, because that's just, you know, we don't have the money and resources to do that. They can make it better, they can improve certain outcomes, they can, you know, they can help things, but I think sometimes in the superintendent job, we're looking for somebody that doesn't exist.
Robert in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Robert.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I operate a nonprofit which provides vocational training to disadvantaged youth at risk. All of our candidates are Duval County High School graduates with either diplomas or certificates or GEDs. When they first look at our program, we do a TABE test, which measures their ability in writing and math. We're finding that most of our applicants don't actually have an eighth grade capability. And when we're trying to teach these young men and women vocational subjects, we're finding that we have to go back to more basic things. So I don't think Dr. Beatty's been doing a good job. I, from my perspective, there's a lot lacking here. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Go ahead, Brian Bank.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, I think, definitely when we did our community thread on education, I spoke to some teachers who obviously had really, really big problems with the curriculum, didn't feel like they had enough time to actually teach the kids and craft their own lesson plans. And this though, is not contained in Duval County. This is statewide. This is almost national. This is an issue that we have with our public education system as a whole, how we fund it with property taxes, how we the choices that we make to divert funding to other types of schools, like charter schools and private school vouchers. And I'm not sure that issues like the caller just described with people not having an adequate reading level or capability in math when they're going into vocational school is something that one superintendent in one county in one state in America can change. I think there's some larger issues here.
There are such deep, complex problems that whoever gets hired is up against quite a bit of a difficulty, but let's go to Vita in Atlantic Beach. Vita, go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for giving my call.
Yep.
Dr. Beatty has done an amazing job. He brought into the city of Jacksonville the city air program, which was phenomenal, where kids could go in and the year for a stipend to help Title I schools. I think he has done an amazing job. I hate to see him go. It appears to me, and I've not attended a school board meeting, but I feel like there's a lot of entitlement from the school board directors that they know what needs to be done, but obviously the improvements weren't happening at the school board. I also would like to say that the worst problem of our school is lack of funding. The teachers are not paid enough money. My daughter is a teacher. She works more than 50 hours plus a week and weekends. And I'm not looking forward to the leaders of tomorrow being cut from a public school that's not been funded properly.
All right. Thanks, Vita. Bye. Thanks for the call. Let's make note of a couple of other news and notes from the week. Is the city banning block parties? Not exactly, but in Zone 5, the area around Edward Waters College, the sheriff's office says on some nights there can be as many as 5 at a time they need to bust up, issues with traffic control, carousing in the street, and so forth. So Councilman Reggie Brown has filed a bill imposing a 90-day moratorium on block parties. It would block them until the end of June. And you know, block parties are fun, but if they're having as many as 5 in one night in one neighborhood, I can see why the police are getting frustrated.
There's an important distinction. Everybody's favorite block parties that you have in your commercial districts like Five Points or San Marcos Square or places in downtown, those will remain unaffected. So I think that's important to say. I think it's important to delve further and say, you know, there are two different types of forms that someone can fill out to hold a block party. There's
right.
One for people that have more than 500 expected guests and they're trying to look to do it in a commercial district. Think GastroFest. Think the block party that 1904 recently did to celebrate its anniversary. And then you have block parties where anybody can basically get approval for to just shut down a street in their neighborhood. And those don't go through a vetting process with JSO. So what Councilman Brown is saying is we should put a hold on that until we figure out how to reform this issue.
And that's the problem, is that when you propose this kind of legislation, it affects the entire city. You don't get away with doing it for a council district or a section in your council.
Yeah.
That's the problem with this. And as Ryan just pointed out, there's a process already in place. The issue is that a number of these folks simply don't even bother with the process. They just decide they're going to have something, and it gets too noisy. Guns start popping off in the middle of the night, and the cops get called. And that's the problem here with this Zone 5 commander having to deal with that, this racing around. It is an education process that possibly Councilman Brown needs to do in his district, because this is where it occurs. There's a particular issue going on right now at the boat ramp over at Harborview, where they have instantaneous parties and you can't even get to the ramp to launch your boat because there's so many people there between, believe it or not, 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock on Sunday. Drive by,
and
you can't even get through there because there's so many people parked in everybody's yard, all up and down Harborview. That's part of what he's talking about.
Did you just invite all of us to a party?
The music is great if you can stand it. It radiates all across the Revolt River over the north side.
Oh, man. Well, going a little farther north from there, fires this week devastated Nassau County. More than 100 people forced to leave their homes in Nassau after a blaze sparked up earlier this week. It was fueled after a newcomer to the neighborhood was apparently burning moving boxes and other paper in his yard. It's been a terrible week in Nassau with these wildfires. And I hope everyone up there is okay. Just wanted to make mention of that. Finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily, there's never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And only in Florida does an iguana force play to actually stop at a tennis match. It happened Wednesday at the Miami Open. The large reptile showed up at court one midway through the final set of Jiří Veselý's 6-7, 6-3, 7-5 victory over Tommy Haas on Wednesday. At first, they tried to continue with the match, but action was halted as many attempts were made to remove the iguana. Haas wandered over with a cell phone and snapped a selfie with the critter. At one point, the unpaid spectator climbed down the scoreboard and ran cross court before winding up on top of another scoreboard. Eventually, they got rid of the critter by grabbing a towel to carry him off.
He wanted to be the center of attention.
Speaking of, only in Florida do crazy men disrupt screenings of Beauty and the Beast. Interestingly, this incident was not about the film's much-discussed gay moment. However, police in St. Augustine say 32-year-old drunken disorderly Adam Jockel was arrested at a theater in St. Aug after yelling at a woman and her 5-year-old daughter in the theater. She was dressed up in a Beauty and the Beast costume.
Aww. All right.
Was there something wrong with the costume? Is that why she was yelling at her?
No, this guy was harassing them. It was very sad. And we need to make a correction from yesterday. Only in Florida do radio talk show hosts incorrectly report that Air Supply is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. When speaking with Carrie Spangman yesterday, I incorrectly said that the Australian mega group did make it into the Rock Hall. By the way, they're playing the Florida Theater this weekend. I got this information from the Spectator.
Oh, throwing the Spectator.
But
I know.
Wow. But it's my fault. I should have checked.
You're going to catch
They are in the Australian Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, not the one in Cleveland. There is an online petition requesting that Air Supply be enshrined in the Hall of Fame. Please avoid adding your name.
Yeah, I'm so relieved at this news. So relieved.
Yeah, you're going to catch it from Kerry.
I know. I'm in trouble. Thank you, Ryan Bank, Fred Matthews, and Tim Gibbons. Guys, thanks as always. We'll see you next week.
All thanks.
Right, take care.
We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
North Florida TPO, proud sponsor of WJCT's First Coast Connect, bringing to the community innovation in transportation planning, commuter services, clean fuels, and intelligent transportation systems. More at NorthFloridaTPO.com.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, it's the Friday News Roundup. We'll help you fill in the blanks.
600.
K.
No.
Actually, there is one K. This week, we'll be at the studios of KQED in San Francisco. The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Jazz Night in America, it's the 100th birthday of Billie Holiday. Cassandra Wilson brings her new project to the Kennedy Center, and pianist Barbara Carroll talks about the opportunity she had to perform with Lady Day.
And when she sang, the expression was outstanding, very often heartbreaking.
That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Incredible speakers will take the stage next week for Generation W on the UNF campus. We have a preview right now as we welcome in studio Gen W founder Donna Orender. Good to see you.
Oh, gosh, it's wonderful to talk to you about this and so many things, Melissa. What a great group you have every Friday morning.
Thank you. And I'm so glad to have you here. Also on the line, Olenda E. Johnson, PhD. She's professor of strategic leadership and leader development at the U.S. Naval War College. Dr. Johnson, thanks for being with us.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
And you'll be one of the speakers on the stage at Generation W. You've worked to advance leadership and ethics development for the U.S. Navy. Can you give us a preview of what you'll be discussing at the event?
Well, I am very much a storyteller, so I am hoping to share my experience and how I ended up in this role teaching military officers leadership, and hoping to inspire others in the process.
Donna Orender, having Dr. Johnson appear at Generation W is just one example of the array of thought leaders and speakers that people will be able to benefit from.
She is so amazing. I had the privilege of getting to know her at a leadership summit at the Fuqua School of Business at Duke University. And it was 20 very special people. We had the former joint chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We had the guy who runs the Navy. I know that's not very official in a Navy town, but it was amazing people. And Dr. Johnson is just incredibly erudite and special. And I think having her come here is such a gift for everyone who's going to get to hear her speak.
And, you know, Dr. Johnson, with scandals rocking the military over the years, you know, there was the tailhook scandal in the Navy. Recently, there's been a nude photo scandal in the Marines. All of these issues of women in the military, you've lived those issues. Is that going to be part of your talk?
Well, I probably won't address those issues specifically, but I will tell you, as someone who works on leadership and ethics issues for the Navy writ large, it is constantly at the forefront. I will tell you that we are working hard to ensure that we respect every person who is a part of this great service. And so in terms of my talk, I think if anything, I hope to uphold those values that everyone has a place, that everyone matters, that everyone can contribute, and that particularly we as women, we really have the power and the opportunity to make a difference, even in an environment like the United States military and the Navy in particular.
Pretty special, right? You know what's amazing is Dr. Johnson will be here. She's never been to our area, and I know she's going to come here and love it. We have another Dr. Johnson coming, Dr. Crystal Johnson, and I can't wait for the two of them to meet because she is a senior leader at NASA, the Goddard Space Center.
Excellent. Yeah.
And we have this incredible segment, you know, our belief in the bringing together of the wow of our girls and the wisdom of our wisdom. We call it Wowsdom Generation Wow. And we have three women in various stages of their lives. We have a seventh grader, a graduating senior, and of course now an accomplished research innovator executive from NASA, all with a passion around space. And I think I am very excited about this segment because I think it will show all of us how passion develops and then how we can help each other intergenerationally to actually achieve our dreams and goals. It will be really great. So we have a pair of Dr. Johnsons in the house who are exemplary women.
Well, I guess, you know, if I can chime in here, Melissa, that's one of the reasons why I am really, really excited to participate in this event. As Donna mentioned, we met at this Duke Leadership Summit, and there were several women there who had participated in Gen W previously. And I have to tell you, there was just something different about them. They were just so excited, and there was almost this sense of renewal and confidence in them. And in speaking with them, they all had Jim W. as the common thread, and they were eager to share that with others. And so this is just, you know, in my eyes, I'm a first-timer. I am so looking forward to it. It just seems like an extraordinary event, and just the idea that Donna can pull together all these different people from every walk of life, from every age, and use that to collectively inspire across generations is just phenomenal to me. Absolutely phenomenal. So I'm truly looking forward to it.
And this is the sixth annual event on the UNF campus coming up at the end of March. Gen W Now is the place to go to register for tickets, an all-day event.
It is all day. We expect you to get there early. As you know, Melissa, you've been there. It starts out with a tremendous amount of energy, and we believe in addressing the whole person. So there's music and poetry. And listen, we would not be able to do this without, I mean, in fact, last night, I mean, I get to be very contemplative these last couple of days as we pull it all together and filled with gratitude of all the speakers, over 180, nearly 200 over these years, of how much they're still a part of the foundation of Gen W and committed to coming here to Jacksonville, a place where now they look as a destination, mm-hmm. a place of thought leadership and all of that great stuff. But it's because of a lot of the partners we've had since the beginning, you know, Southeastern Grocers and Wells Fargo and now web.com and KPMG, Pepsi, the PGA Tour. You know, the list is formidable and the relationships are wonderful because it's really built on a common belief of the ability to make a difference.
Excellent. Well, mark your calendar for Generation W. Get your tickets at genwnow.com. WJCT will be on hand as well. And Donna Orender, so good to see you. And Dr. Johnson, Olenda E. Johnson, PhD, with the U.S. Naval War College on the line with us. Enjoy your time here in Jacksonville, Doctor, and thanks for being with us.
I definitely will. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Yes, and yes, yes, yes. I can't wait for it all. Joyce Russell from ADECO is coming. Oh, my goodness. I cannot wait. 1 week to go. 1 week. Please, everybody, buy your tickets. This is the time. Registration. It's all closing out.
Yes, it's closing out. Do it now. And we'll be right back.
Visit the opulent Royal Palace at Versailles to see what money and power can do to a country.
They get the revolution when they see the spending out there.
Look at the issues France is facing today.
France is a bit of the United States of Europe.
And see what's coming between Israelis and Palestinians in the West Bank.
That's what walls do, is they keep people separated. And I think that it's a shame.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday mornings at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
From electronica to blues, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. India and its emerging economy is set to change the world. So says James Astill, Washington correspondent for The Economist. Astill spoke in Jacksonville recently, courtesy of the World Affairs Council, about the rise of modern India. And he gave us this preview. Take a listen. James Astill, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure. Great to be here.
You're talking about the rise of modern India. That's a subject of fascination, I think, for the group assembled by the World Affairs Council here in Jacksonville. Can you give us a short preview of your talk?
Sure. Well, I want to sort of lay out how dramatic is India's recent growth. It will soon, around about 2022, be the most populous country in the world. It's already one of the fastest growing countries in the world. In the last decade and a half, really, its growth rate has leapt from something sort of modest and typical of South Asia, around 3-4%, to more like 7-8%, and sometimes it gets up to double-digit growth, China-esque growth. Okay. So one of the things I'm doing is sort of painting that dramatic picture and remarking on the ways in which this will change the world, actually. And I've got some more specific comments to make about the nature of India's growth.
And I think that the population growth there, the growth of their economies, maybe it's looked at with trepidation by a lot of Americans rather than excitement. People in this country don't have a deep understanding of India in terms of its political climate, the culture. We tend to kind of traffic in stereotypes and what we see in popular culture when we think about India. Having been based there, what are some misconceptions about their growth and the opportunities that presents that you might be clearing up for this audience?
Well, I don't think I picked up that same sense of trepidation that you describe, but I think that I will be trying to address a possible misconception, but it's sort of a misconception the other way. In the last 12 years, I think it started with George W. Bush, America at a diplomatic government-to-government level has been launching a really big push to improve and deepen America's ties with India. Mm-hmm. The Bush administration and the Obama administration pretty much followed suit on this, saw India as a democracy and therefore a potentially important liberal Asian ally which shared American values in the heart of Asia, with great heft in terms of its economy and its population and to a certain extent its military, and therefore a potential counterweight to the rise of a less friendly China. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a certain rationale to that calculation. Indeed, India is in many ways all of those things. It certainly is a democracy, miraculously, given that it's a very large, poor country with a messy and very thin state. Mm-hmm. But America's efforts to improve its ties to India have not been straightforwardly successful. And I think that Americans have tended, certainly at a government level, have tended to be a little bit too optimistic about how willing India would be to enter into a deep bilateral alliance with America. India is still very much scarred by its long colonial history and very reluctant to make any kind of lasting alliance outside its region.
Sure. Now, and you mentioned the incredible population growth there is set to change the world. How so? How will we feel that change?
Well, we'll feel it in a number of ways. For one, economically, India is already a very substantial market for example, consumer goods. And of course, that demand will grow enormously as its very large population gets richer. I mean, you read different figures depending on how you define middle class, but there's talk of already a consumer middle class in India of, you know, well over 100 million people. Mm-hmm. So that has enormous economic potential. And indeed, if India carries on growing at the sort of rate that it has been growing recently, it will end up as a sort of major engine of growth for the global economy. Mm-hmm. in a decade or two. There are a whole manner of other areas in which India will be influential. A stable, responsible India taking a more forward military and strategic role in Asia has indeed a potential to counterbalance a perhaps less predictable China. But the stability and peaceful rise of Asia, of India, as I'll also point out in my remarks, is not absolutely assured.
And why not?
because there are huge imbalances in the country, obviously in terms of wealth inequality, you still have 170 million people who are grindingly poor and many more who are only just a very little bit wealthier. But also regionally, you have great disparities. The growth in India is being driven by the relatively prosperous and organized and well-governed parts of the west and south of the country. Mm. And in the north and east, you have a very different picture indeed. And unless India can find a way to sort of spread that prosperity and growth around a little bit more equitably, it will risk getting more of the civil strife that it's already seeing a lot of. There is a major Maoist insurgency in eastern India, and a couple of dozen smaller insurgencies that don't even get reported on in international press. So there are pressures on the Indian state that I think are not widely appreciated.
Thanks for being with us.
Great pleasure.
That was James Astill, Washington correspondent for The Economist, visiting Jacksonville recently. And finally this hour, set in 1950s Pittsburgh, Fences tells the story of Troy Maxson, a former baseball player in the Negro Leagues who's now reduced to collecting trash to make a living. Troy has to deal with his headstrong son, whose football career has the potential to eclipse his own, and also with his wife, who reevaluates the marriage when Troy brings home a baby he fathered with another woman. Winner of the 1985 Pulitzer Prize for Drama, Fences is a heart-wrenching tale of love, ambition, and the struggles of black families in the 50s. It's also the recent Oscar-winning film. We're pleased to welcome director Jeremy Rakit, an alumni of Douglas Anderson School of the Arts. He's the director of Fences, on stage now at Players by the Sea. Good morning.
Good morning.
And actress Chantel Robinson in the role of Rose Maxson, also with us. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
This is a really powerful play, and it's great to see Players by the Sea doing it. Tell us a little bit about the show, Jeremy. Some folks might have gone and seen the film with Denzel Washington and Viola Davis, but of course it began as a Broadway show.
Oh, yes, and it's been successful since then. It's won Pulitzer Prize, Tony Awards. Mr. Wilson is such a fabulous playwright. This was one of 10 that he did in Pittsburgh. And it happens to be one of the most popular ones. So it does follow the life of, you know, you just gave a great description of the show, and it follows this guy's life. But the language is so rich and so pertinent even to everything that's going on today. It's amazing how through time the message can continue on.
Yeah. Right. And this is set in the 50s, in the Jim Crow era, when there were such struggle for African-American families. And it really takes you into that.
That's right.
Into that time period.
Yeah. And you really, you know, we've had audiences outside of other races as well, say how much this show related to them, you know, because it does take place during that time, and he chose that decade, right, you know, to tell this story. But it also, it's about family too, you know, and we all can relate to family.
Yep. That's right. And so, Chantel, you play Troy's wife, and she discovers that he's fathered a child with someone else. And tell us about your part.
It's a very dynamic role, I would say. Rose possesses quite a quiet strength. And I think she gets to a point where she has her breaking point once that news is released, but she still remains very strong, has a lot of strength, but she also possesses forgiveness. And I think that's a big piece for this production as well.
That's a theme of this show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, the part you play, Viola Davis just won the Oscar for that. So it's a really good part.
Yeah, no pressure.
Now, this has been on stage for about a week. How's the audience loving it so far?
Oh, they've been great. They've been, it's been overwhelming.
Exciting crowds, exciting audiences. They are fully, fully engaged in the story, and that makes it all the more exciting for us as the actors to tell this amazing story.
Just a couple more weeks to see Fences, right?
Yeah.
Closes at the end of March.
Two more weeks. Two more weekends, including this one. And it closes April 1st. So
get your tickets now at playersbythesea.org for the Pulitzer Prize winning drama Fences. Jeremy Rakett is the director, Chantel Robinson in the role of Rose Max. And thanks so much for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs our board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. We always want your feedback. Send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and download the WJCT app to listen to the show anytime. Up next on 1A, the weekly news roundup. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.